and welcome back to Vox Popcast, the weekly pseudo-academic roundtable of pop culture analysis with drinking and swearing. My name is Christopher Maverick, but you can call me Mav, and I am once again here with my co-host, Wayne Wise. Hey, Wayne, how's it going?
Hey, Mav. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It is summer vacation. Sort of. It's not... I mean, I've taught my last class of the semester, but finals aren't due yet, so I've got, like, you know... a bunch of grading coming up, but like today it feels like, hey, I don't have to wear nice clothes again for like 3 months. So like, I've also got a bunch of meetings next week and they're about to see, you know, well, I mean, you've seen the ways that I dress, like when I'm going to work versus when I'm not. They are about to very much meet t-shirt and hoodie Mav. T-shirt and hoodie Mav will be taking meetings for the next couple weeks. Like, shirt and tie, because they're always, I'm not required to wear shirts and ties. I dress nicer than most of the other teachers at Pitt, most of the other professors at Pitt. Most people don't dress up. I wear a shirt and tie every day, but I wear jeans. And people are like, oh, you dress so nice. And I was like, well, I want to be professional when I'm teaching. But for meetings, no. I have a collection, as many shirts, and I mean, as many ties as I have, which is, you know, probably 50, 100. I don't know. I have a lot of ties. I have as many hoodies. I have mini hoodies.
I do when I do my, when I taught and when I do my presentations. I mean, you've seen me. I do my, you know, cheap suit jacket.
Blazer over
something. And some of that just because it's unusual enough for me that I feel I need to put on my teaching costume just to get in character. So,
That's anyway. What I'm doing. It's my day off. Well, we got a guest, and I will introduce the guest before I introduce the topic, because I'm sure she has thoughts on this as well. Welcome back, Nicole Frymer, friend of the show. It's been, I think, 3 weeks since you were on. I lose track.
It's been forever.
I think you were on a couple weeks ago. The last time you were on was when we were at PCA, and now you've had some time.
And then I basically just, you know, pushed my way onto the show because I said, hey, let's do it in my room.
Well, I mean, it's convenient. I love the PCA live show. We'll do one every year. We're back. It's the easiest thing in the easiest show to schedule of the year is it's very much a who's around. We're gonna go record one. So that's what we're doing. But are you feeling decompressed from having, you know, you've had a couple weeks off from the
feeling better. I will admit, like the first week, I slept so much. I mean, I got a little bit of the airport cold, but I was sleeping like an extra 4 or 5 hours a day.
Wow.
And it was lovely.
Yeah. For the listeners who don't know, Nicole is the vice president of PCA. So you get very busy. One of four vice presidents?
Yes.
Yeah. Something like that. But yeah, you're one of the vice presidents of the Popular Culture Association, vice president of area chairs, I believe, correct?
Yes.
So very busy during conference week, even more so busy than the rest of us being very busy. And you're busy in the lead up to it in a way that I'm really not. Like my area is tiny. It's a little bit of work.
Although you had great turnout for your panel this year. So yeah, I think next year maybe you're going to get some bigger numbers.
I might. And I was talking about it with the people who were in my area. And I basically said, if you guys can each... you know, bring another friend, you know, double the size of the area, plus whoever just ends up, like maybe I'll host a round table next time too. I've got some ideas. I've got some thoughts. So, it was fun though. I had a fun time at the conference, but that's not what we're talking about today. What are we talking about today, Wayne?
I don't know. This came up a couple weeks ago. We did a show, I don't know, a month ago. I don't know, something.
Sometime ago. Time is an illusion.
Yeah, on remakes of songs, you know, cover songs, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that episode, we talked about sort of theoretically the idea of remaking a movie is sort of the same thing, but complex and bigger. So it's sort of not really reboot. Like the new Ghostbusters stuff is a reboot, but an actual remake of a movie or TV show. And we just thought, oh, let's talk about that. So
one of the impetuses was time of recording. There's a lot of people talking about this new Crow movie that's coming out this year. And a lot of people, old people, you know, people our age going, who wants this? Nobody needs this movie. And then, you know, also does anybody need any movie? I would argue, it's sort of a, someone has a vision. This vision might not be for you, but if you've seen the, that's where I want to start, because if you've seen the commercials or the advertisements or, any stills for the new Crow, he looks significantly different than the original. Than the original, well, I shouldn't even say the original, because the original Crow was a comic book, but the Crow film is relatively faithful to the graphic novel, to the comic book from 5 years earlier. And the subsequent Crow sequels and the Crow TV shows really sort of try to capture that aesthetic that Brandon Lee had for the first Crow movie. And this is a radical departure from that.
And as I am one of his friends who has great affection for the comic and the original, the first film, I, as Matt said, I had thoughts. So,
So, okay, well, start there. You like the first film then.
Let's start there because I think that's important. That's where a lot of this conversation comes from, is expectation based on past experience with a property.
Okay, so I'll start off by saying I read comics when I was younger, and then I sort of got out of them for a bit in kind of middle school, high school. And when I was in college, I was sitting in the room one night, and my roommate had a comic that her friend had given her. And I was like, I'll pick. And I picked it up and I read it. It was the first part of The Crow. And I was like, oh my God, wow, this is, because this, of course, was not what I was used to. I had not been reading comics during the whole Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, gritty, grim and gritty whole shift, right? So I was impressed. And so then I read, I read the rest of it. And then that's sort of how I got back into comics as a, well, I use the term grown up loosely. So then when the film came out, I was very excited because I felt a great fondness for the comic and I adored Brandon Lee. Yes, I have Rapid Fire and Showdown in Little Tokyo, both of which are
Yes,
delightful.
the grand filmography of Brandon Lee, which is like three movies. I mean, on the other hand, James Dean, same thing, right?
Well, if you haven't seen Showdown in Little Tokyo, let me put it this way. It also stars Dolph Lundgren,
Yes.
Tia Carrera. So, you can see where this is going already. So I was very enamored of the film. I thought it was a very well done film. Now, realistically, it is close in many respects to the book, but it is not a faithful interpretation of the book.
Okay.
Okay,
So,
I mean, there are differences.
yeah, changes were made. Changes were made in the adaptation, as we've talked about adaptation on this show before. And if you, I'm going to cite something because we are a pseudo academic podcast after all. There's a great book on adaptation theory by Linda Hutchison, which I often assign it as reading in classes that I do on narrative theory. But the long and short of it is, you don't necessarily want an adaptation into a new medium to be exactly the same thing as the original story, because mediums are different and audiences are different. And also, you're an author, you're an auteur of some kind, you're an artist. As an artist, you want to be able to make your own choices, that like perhaps the choices that that Brandon Lee, performer, wants to make for his version of Crow might not be the same as, as the James O'Barr, the author of the original comic. James O'Barr and Brandon Lee might want to say something different. And then the director has his own, Alex Proyas was the director of the original Crow movie. He might have his own input. Everybody has their own input. So adaptations are different. The simple fact that one is on a comic book page and one is in a film changes the medium. Time works different ways. Visuals work in different ways. It needs to be a different story.
And I mean, I wasn't like upset that it was different because I'm sort of the same thing, right? That once you, if you're a reader and you, the very first time you get very excited to see a movie based on one of your favorite books, and then you realize, oh crap, what was that? Right? That's when you realize everything that you were just saying, that things don't always translate the same way. People make different choices. People want to put their own spin on it. And most of the time I'm okay with that. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Jaws is one of my favorite movies. Mm. And frankly, I think it's better than the book.
Okay. Is Jaws a good book? I've never read the book. I mean, I know it exists, but is it any good?
I think it's decent. I mean, there's a reason why it became so popular.
I thought the reason it became so popular was the film, actually. But was it popular before the movie came out?
It came out shortly before the film. I mean, and then, of course, they have to get the rights to it and make it. And so it was a good book. There are differences and there's things that they left out, like in the book. Spoiler alert for, you know, a nearly 50-year-old book, that, like, there was a whole subplot of Hooper having an affair with Mrs. Brody. Mm. And, of course, they cut that, which I'm like, yeah, I think so. Keep the focus tighter. And I think sometimes that's what happens, is also because in a book just has more time.
Yeah.
Right? The rule of thumb for adaptation is a page of screenplay is a minute of screen time.
Right.
So, you know, if you had 120, that's already 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And most books are at least 300.
So, and books are 300-page novel. So the novel Jaws is, in its original format, 278 pages. I just checked. And a novel page is far more densely packed than a script. So if you did a direct translation, you'd probably end up with like a 500-page screenplay, which is like a 10-hour film. That's a miniseries.
This is why now we're getting the popularity of these shows like Game of Thrones, which is let's take a book and turn it into, you know, all of these episodes so that we can fit more of it in.
Yes.
Which,
yes,
you get more, you know, time. Do it. At any rate, I completely agree. I mean, like I said, the first time that happened, I had read The Shining and my boyfriend was like, let's watch The Shining. And I'm like, oh, great. I love that book.
Surprise.
You know who didn't like that book? Stanley Kubrick. He seriously does not care for it. They changed it because he's like, oh no, let us change this.
I think sometimes both can be good, but you have to sort of admit that they're for different reasons. Like V for Vendetta, I think, is a good movie. It is a terrible adaptation of the book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It only kept like two things.
The mask.
and her torture scene.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's pretty much all that they kept. And so I love the book. I teach the book in a Utopia's Dystopia class.
It's a different, it's an entirely different experience, you're saying.
Yes. You know. And if you were to ask me, I think the book is better, but they're different. Mm-hmm. And so I can appreciate the film as its own thing.
Okay. So I would agree. I would agree that happens with all adaptations. I mean, as comic book scholars, and in this era of comic book superhero films, you know, you're never going to get the same thing. Like the world, I know a lot of people want faithful adaptations, but honestly, they only think they want faithful adaptations. Mm-hmm. Actual faithful adaptations of the history of Spider-Man would be god awful boring, because there's a lot of really bad Spider-Man comics. I know, I've read them. You know, there's a lot of good ones too, but like, it's repetitious. There's you don't want to adapt the entire life of Spider-Man. A lot of it sucked. Mm. You know, like that's it.
Well, and my thought on if it's a straight adaptation, and you, some of the comments on our blog on this you reflected this, is if it's just a straight up adaptation, like read the book.
That thing already.
I've got it. Yeah. You know, the idea of interpretation as opposed to straight adaptation.
Right.
And I realize a lot of people are going to watch a 2-hour movie rather than read a 300-page novel or comic or whatever. It's just, you know, preference for media.
60 years of comic, even, you know, right. Right. Yeah. Like, so I get it.
Yeah. And, you know, people are going to watch more people saw the Watchmen movie than have read that graphic novel in 35 years. Right. Still.
And it's a classic. I mean, it's a book that's never been out of print, and it's one of the best-selling comics of all time.
Yes.
And yet just the audience of film is bigger. So, and changes are made in some, you know, like, I don't appreciate all the changes. So the Watchmen's a good example. I think the book is far better, mostly because the changes that were made, I didn't appreciate. And then there were other things that Snyder kept that I think he should have changed. And so like just the choices that were made, I don't appreciate, but they're his choices to make. So like, you know,
Yeah.
fine.
Well, it's also the difference in media, which is things that work in comics, the things that make Watchmen work as a comic don't necessarily translate to the media of film.
Right, which is why, which was an intentional move on the part of Gibbons and Moore. Like they wanted that to be the case at the time. So, with all that said, let's talk about The Crow that is coming out this year. Because I wrote about, I'll start with not just the blog that I wrote for the show. I had originally, a few weeks ago, I had written this thing for just a Facebook post where I dump thoughts that are, my Facebook posts are always very loosely organized. They tend to be longer than other people's, I know, because I'm wordy. But like, it was basically me saying, look, the reason he looks different, he, you know, is this weirdo tattooed up, you know, alt rocker, you know, 2024 era punk, is because it's the year 2024, and if you were an emo edgelord rocker dude in the year 2024, and you looked like, you know, an androgynous mime, you'd be very out of place. People would be like, why are you dressing like somebody from the 90s? That was 30 years ago. What's wrong with you, you fucking poser? This guy. So the guy, you know, the guy who is the Crow now, and I've not seen it, but like my presumption from the
I saw
commercials
that.
is this is a, it's a reinterpretation of Eric Draven, because I've seen the you know, it's not out yet. So, but like the Draven from this commercial looks the way that I would expect a character with the origin of the Crow, and the film origin and the comic origin are, they're essentially the same for this purpose, right? A person with that origin should look like this guy much more so than he should look like what Brandon Lee looked like in 1993. That that's my argument.
When I and I haven't seen a lot of the stuff. I've seen the pictures, and my thought was, and I get the controversy comes from just people being older and they have this expectation. People who are fans of the original having this expectation. But I saw that, and as someone who has gone to a lot of concerts with a lot of people over the last 40 years and seen that scene grow and change,
Change, yeah.
I just see the modern one as an extension of the original. This is what it turned into. To me, the
Yes.
aesthetic isn't different enough to even comment on.
I mean, to me, he looks like the point that I made when I wrote the original thing is, you know, if this character existed today, he should look more like Post Malone than like Glenn Danzig. Glenn Danzig is a 50-something-year-old man who doesn't look like, you know, like that was my feeling on it. Like he shouldn't, you know, he should look like the, you know, the 20-something
Well,
rocker. And
and the original Crow's makeup goes back to Alice Cooper, which predates him by 20 plus years.
right, but it's but he's not exactly the Alice Cooper look. He's a deviation from Alice Cooper to
Yeah,
look more '90s-ish.
the mime type eyes, you know, that design of the eyes. And it's not like it was original with Alice Cooper either. That goes
No,
back to
no.
Harlequin imagery.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
So, I mean, it was goths grew up is basically the point that I'm making. Go ahead, Nicole.
Okay, but there's different sort of, I guess I would call them objections to the film, right? And I would say that, I think at least for me, part of it is I don't care so much about how he looks, because you're right. This is the updated version. If they put him in the same outfit as Brandon, people would be like, okay, I can go with that. But for me, I'm upset that they're calling him, that it's Eric and Shelley, because we already established they did other movies. Hell, Kirsten Dunst was in one. Right. They did other movies with this idea of the Crow bringing somebody back, basically a revenant, right, to come have their revenge. And it didn't have to be Eric and Shelley. So that's the thing that upsets me,
It's
is
actually
I feel
only
like.
in Eric is in the first movie, and he is the character.
In
He
the
is
TV
the in the
series.
TV in the TV show, but like the there's
That has
been
its own
so
issues.
yeah, there's been so far three sequels before this reboot, and they all had each one has a different crow, I believe.
Yes. So I have zero problem with saying let's do another Crow movie. But those of us who have that sort of affection for the first one, coupled with the affection we have for Brandon and the fact that he was killed tragically and there is no more, and this was basically the high point of his career because that's where it ended. Why I think some of us, and I think some people, there was all the pushback both about the way he looked and the overall reaction to the trailer. It wasn't just about how he looked. It was more like, why are you doing this? Why are you ruining that for us? Couldn't you just give him a different name? We've already done that. We're already ready to accept that.
So,
But.
counterpoint though is, couldn't you say the same thing about Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman or Spider-Man? Or, we've had other superheroes, and Christopher Reeve and George Reeves, they both died tragically in one way or another, and yet here comes Henry Cavill, and here comes this new guy. We are like we could make a we could make movies about other Supermen. We could make a they were trying to do so. They were trying to make a movie about what's his name? What is the Superman of Earth 3 or Earth 2? The black Superman that Michael B. Jordan wanted to make a movie of. So you could do that, right? But also you don't sometimes because the answer is they're going to make more money with even with the movie about Eric Draven than they were going to make about John Munroe, the fifth crow. Like they
And
weren't going to make that much money.
I understand that, and I understand that's why they did it. And I would argue with, yeah, Christopher Reeve, it was, had the accident, he was in the wheelchair, it was tragic, he died younger than he should have, but he had like other decades of movies and things that he did. And so, although he's very identified with Superman,
I also
I
think
don't quite
Superman,
see him that way. I think also
man.
because we're maybe more used to thinking of various interpretations of these characters because while other Crow versions did start to come out later, they did write other comics. It wasn't that way at the beginning, right?
Right. You mean
So,
in the comics, was it?
And that's exactly where I was going to go, Nicole. It's just we have so many different iterations of Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, etc., through comics and cartoons. In the comics themselves, they're how have radically different interpretations of the character over the decade. Whereas the Crow is very specifically associated with Brandon Lee in people's minds.
Well,
And
because
even in the comics, I mean, the 18 people who have read Crow comics,
and to say
apparently I'm one of them, so
Well, but
and I
even
realize it
with
was more popular than that, but in the big
well,
picture,
not
I
anymore, I
mean,
don't think.
not anymore. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Not anymore.
So when I made the original post, people were like, "Oh, I love this," and my point was just like all the people who are saying I love this. It's like, yes, but you're my friends. You're aging, people who were weird emo goths in college 30 years ago, like. No one, if you wander into a comic book store today, Crow comics are not flying off the shelves. This is a thing to, and they weren't back then. I worked in the store when that comic came out. I was selling a couple of issues to a couple of people who were like, So like it was never making Superman numbers. And the films, because people find out, well, the Crow could be anybody. We've had other people be the Crow in films too. And yes. And none of those films made any money. The third Crow movie came out in 2005, and it has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. 0%. It made
Is
a
that the
couple
one with
mil.
David Boreanaz?
It is the one with Edward Furlong is the third one.
Yeah, David Boreanaz. I think.
Boreanaz is in it too. Yeah, that is the one. Yes. Yeah, Edward Furlong is J. Boreanaz plays Luke Death Crash in that one. Yeah,
Yeah.
it made no money. Like
Oh, I didn't realize it had a 0%. Yeah.
the one before that, the one with Kirsten Dunst in it has, I think, an 11%. No, 18%.
One had Fred Ward in it also.
Yeah, like nobody is watching these movies, right? Like they aren't doing well. They're just attempts to do, they're attempts to capture the magic again. And I think part of, the people who are complaining about this are people who are very invested because they are huge fans of that original property. But I'm gonna break people's heart here. This is not the Ghostbusters thing. Yeah, like a couple of years ago when Ghostbusters got rebooted and they brought out the all-female Ghostbusters cast and everybody was mad, Ghostbusters was a much bigger movie than The Crow. And it has a much bigger fandom that's lasted a lot longer.
Oh, yeah.
And even then, I thought that was an overreaction. I thought, you know, why can't there be all-female
Ghostbusters? So if those numbers are so bad, to get back to one of the original questions, is why do a remake of this in the first place?
Because the original Crow had much better ratings. Like, they're just taking a shot, you know.
God forbid they write their own freaking script.
I think that's a big part of what we get back to for just the larger question of why do remakes, why do cover songs of movies is, you know, they own the IP. They don't have to spend more money this way. That's a jaded point of view, but it's absolutely better for them to take a chance on something that was successful once than to put money into a completely unknown product. Those completely unknown products every once in a while become something. You know, The Crow is an unknown product when first time around, but it does feel, and some of this I think is the age thing. It's everything being remade. Well, it's because we're old enough that we've seen this stuff before, you know.
I was curious, you know, because I knew we were doing this. And so I went and I was looking up some of the remakes that I sort of know or I appreciate either the first or the second, right? And it was funny because I was noticing that most of them were like in the 30 to 40 year range. And it is, like you're saying, it's for the new generation, right? Sometimes more like 50. So like 310 to Yuma.
Okay.
The original was 57. The remake was 2007.
So literally 50 years.
Yeah. And I think both of those are good. Or like Assault on Precinct 13, 30 years. Some of them go even longer. Like, you know, Cape Fear was 30 years.
Yeah.
And then you get into, you know, like Father of the Bride or Death Wish or Dial M for Murder, which then was remade as A Perfect Murder, right? Those are like in the 40-year range, right?
Yeah. Well, The Crow is 30, right?
Yeah. Well, and I do think some of that is, there is that reality of a young audience is A, unlikely to even know the original existed, or B, not have any interest in seeing the original because it feels dated. So it's a way of bringing back this IP. And once again, the IP thing makes it cheaper, but it also, here's an audience. It's the old, the Marvel comics in the 60s. Our entire audience turns over every 2 years. No one's going to know if we tell that Green Goblin story again. Well, in movies, the entire audience has turned over in 40 years. No one knows what Cape Fear is.
The other thing, I mean, it sort of ties in a little bit, is that there's sort of different, there's like the different groups of remakes. You have the remakes that reuse the same title, and you have remakes that change the title. So people, unless you know the original, you don't necessarily know you're watching a remake, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the, we're going to remake a foreign film. Those, the time, the timeline was much, much quicker, right?
The Ring, like, and Ringu.
Yeah. Or La Femme Nikita and Point of No Return.
Point of No Return, which is like, I think 3 years?
It was about real close. It was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're longer, sometimes they're shorter. But I mean, with foreign films or different names, it's, I think, sometimes less clear that you're watching a remake. And like you said, even when they do reuse the name, people don't always realize it. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless it was a really big film. You know,
so the one that I thought of that I didn't put in the blog was A Star is Born. A Star is Born's been made four times, and I've seen all of them. But there's a 37 version, there's a 54 version, there's a 76 version, and then there's the most recent one from 2017. All actually really good. I mean, it in their own way, there are differences. The others seem dated, but they're all the same story. The characters have more or less the same names. There's like little modifications but for the most part, they are exactly identical stories. And it's just each generation seems to want to have their version of this story. And, you know, the 2017 version feels very different than the 1937 one. It really does. Yeah. I understand why that choice was made. So You know, that's fine. And frankly, the 54 version, which is the one that I, which is one that I really like because it's the one that stars Judy Garland, and I love her. It feels very different than the 34 one. So there's an update to it. You know, I go to 37. Like I understand why that choice is made, and that's why I'm sort of, I'm never precious about them. Like I want to see people do interesting things. We had a comment from, you know, a listener who happens to be my sister-in-law. So she's talking about her daughter, but Dana says, maybe we fear getting old and but making something new makes it appeal to a different demographic. My daughter likes watching movies more in keeping with her sense of style. She says movies from the 80s are scary because to her they have a more worn out and old-timey vibe. And in fact, many 80s movies are grainy and display attitudes that are not cool today and use language that was cool back then but isn't cool now. And you know, she's right. Like, again, this is a kid that I know. It's my niece. So, like, but I don't think she's being weird beyond any other 13-year-old girl. She's, you know, she's got a sensibility that was, you know, of a person who was raised in her entirety in the 21st century. She is 13 years old today, which means that she was born in the 20 teens. And so everything about her life is, you know, very much a 21st century invention. So something that's from the 20th century, the tail end of the 20th century, but still the 20th century, just feels dated. You know, Joe Dorowski, friend of the show, he pointed out that like he was talking about something about a movie with his daughter who's around that age. I think she's 14, and she said, "Is that an old movie?" And Joe said, "What counts as an old movie?" And she told him, "Wasn't invented before Wi-Fi." And yeah, that's a good point. Like, that is a ubiquitous technology that like is it invented before Wi-Fi is like saying to us, wasn't it invented before television? Because yeah, like that is an important distinction. It's, you know, it's one of those things where I watch movies today, like I think about all the movies that I loved as a kid or a teenager or a young 20 something. There are so many movies from my youth where the entire plot line falls apart if there's the invention of a cell phone. It's just like literally the ability to call somebody just.
Well, and I am very conscious in the last 10 years of the hoops creators go through to get cell phones out of the equation in movies.
Right, because anything that anytime there's like a mistaken identity or like a rom-com of, you know, somebody setting them up and they get the wrong person, there's like so much should be like, no, if I can just text you a picture, you know, like solve so many problems or, you know.
I've seen some really convoluted ways of getting cell phone out of horror films so people can't call for help.
Or just like, you know, oh, someone forgot to leave a message. No one leaves messages anymore. You know, like there's a thing where somebody left a message in the refrigerator, but it fell off. And now the entire plot is built around the hijinks that ensue because somebody never got that message. But no one misses messages anymore. You just text the person and they get it on their laptop and their phone and their iPad. And like, you know, messages are just there now.
Well, and that is when in watching something that predates you, that change in technology, and it. I mean, the changing technology, and we've talked about this before, just the rapidity with which that has changed in our lifetime, like more changes in the last 50 years in technology than in all of history prior to that. It doesn't, you know, it feels dated. This is not a world. If you're 13 years old, the 1980s is a world you don't recognize in any way. And
That
you
was
and I
several
and,
wars ago, not just
yeah,
even for presidents. It was several wars ago. You're like
and I.
asking us to talk about World War One.
Yeah, and that's it. And I, you know, I remember me growing up and seeing movies on TV, and when World War II movies were a thing in the 60s and 70s, and I got to see them on TV. I had the connection because my dad was in that war. It felt a bit more real to me. But that still, that world didn't feel as different to me as I'm sure the 1980s does to someone today. You know, like that, like the, okay, they had telephones. Okay, there wasn't TV, but people were watching movies. You know, the clothing wasn't radically different. Okay, nobody's wearing bell bottoms in 1942, but yeah, some of those things. But it still felt like a world I essentially recognize. And if you're 13 years old and you're watching a movie that doesn't have cell phones, I mean that is the prime example, but just doesn't have the internet. any right. of that stuff just has to feel remarkably unrelatable.
The aspect ratio is wrong. The film quality is off. Like the simple fact that we like the language of cinema has changed. Mm-hmm. Try to show a 13-year-old a movie that has 4 minutes of opening credits, like the way like James Bond movies did. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Why would you? What's going on here? Because like even TV shows don't really have opening credits now. Like mm-hmm. opening credits are 10 seconds. In a TV show, maybe if it's a big, huge blockbuster movie, maybe you get 60 seconds. But for the most part, you know, they just start going, right? Like, you know, you have an opening teaser and then you have a logo and then you move on, right?
Well, so I think, like you're saying, I think it also depends on your personal experience. I mean, I grew up watching more older movies. So while I understood that they were different, I mean, it didn't. The way things change in movies, I mean, to me, it's like, well, that's just how it is because the movie is from this time. Big deal. But you're right. I mean, and I know it's the horrible kids these days, but you're right. I think because there's so much media available now mm-hmm. that the idea of watching something from 30 or 40 years ago from the previous century mm-hmm. is why would I bother? Because mm-hmm. I have all this other stuff that I could watch. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I mean, you know, when I was growing up, it was like, woohoo, when we got HBO and you had a channel.
Of all movies.
Yeah.
Right. But you didn't get to choose the movies. It was whatever was coming up. And so I watched a lot of random movies that I'm like, what? First of all, I'm like, why was I watching that at that age?
Zap, okay. starring Scott Baio.
Hey, I saw that in the theater.
I've seen that, yes.
I didn't see it in the theaters. I've seen it on HBO a dozen times because when they got zapped,
boy, was that an unfortunate double date experience. Let me just say that.
Wow.
I've also seen the sequel Zapped Again, which is a movie that not even Scott Baio would do. That's what I can say about the film. It is so bad.
Yeah.
Now I'm hoping for the remake of Zap. That's what I'm hoping.
Yes.
Well, there have been, right? Like, because which is the point that Nicole was making earlier, like if you call it something different, because Zapped isn't a terribly original concept. Zapped is, hey, wouldn't it be weird if this kid got superpowers but was in high school and so he's going to use his superpowers to get girls and, you know, mm-hmm. and there's that movie exists dozens of times over. Like it's not a terribly original concept. It's like a, you know, it's just what that film is. And I think the stumbling block was something like The Crow or something like Ghostbusters is it's not just doing a version of a familiar story. It's doing a version of a familiar story where you hit something that is beloved by some subset of the public. And there's always going to be part of that subset that sees that thing as so precious that they're going to reject it. So as a business person, as an evil producer in Hollywood, like a, you know, who only wants to see number go up, right? Like the calculus you're doing is, can I gain more people who just want to show this thing they love to their new generation? Like, you know, like with Ghostbusters, the hope was, hey, we've got all these people who loved Ghostbusters when they were 10. Now they're 35. Can we get them to bring their 10-year-old children so that, you know, we can make Ghostbusters mm-hmm. for another 35 years, right? Like, that's the plan. Right. Like, it was that simple. Like, how can we extend this 80s franchise into the year 2050? Like, that's kind of what they're going for. Oh. And I think that, like, sometimes, like, they know there's going to be some rejection, and you're trying to, like, you're trying to juggle that reflection the same way you do when you're extending a series like Star Wars or, like, an MCU. But, like, on a remake, you're trying to, like, you know, can I update this just enough to where you'll spend money but not piss off too many people? And, you know, the question with Crow is, are there any casual fans of The Crow? And, I mean, I think so, because I'm one. But like, I'm not precious about it, but I liked it. I'm curious about this, but I don't have any kids.
I should say, even though I do feel, as you would say, precious about it, mm-hmm. I'll see the new one.
Sure.
I will give it a shot because A, I have a deep fondness for terrible movies, but I seriously, I do. They can mm-hmm. tell you, I watch things like Commando unironically. But so I mean, I'll give these things a chance. Just like, I mean, I watched the new Roadhouse. Now, I have a fondness for the original Roadhouse. I grew up in the 80s. Patrick Swayze was a dancing god to me. I mean, right? And you throw in Sam Elliott. Wow. Right. Okay. It is, the original is a masterpiece of cheese ridiculousness, and it is beautiful. Right.
Now, I'm told, and again, I'm told, and I've not gotten around to watching the new Roadhouse yet, but I do want to see it. I'm told that the new Roadhouse is garbage because it is missing the most important part of Roadhouse, which is you got to rip out a throat. Like, that just matters. You got to just randomly, indiscriminately kill a man by ripping his throat out of his neck. And that is not there.
To me, that was one of the things about the original one that I'm like, that's so stupid.
Well, it was stupid. I mean, it's a stupid movie. I enjoy Roadhouse immensely.
But it is not good. For me, I own that movie and I love that movie. And to me, that was like one of the parts that I'm like, eh.
Right. Okay, now, fair enough.
I watched the new one. And in my opinion, right, it's not really a remake, I don't think. I mean, it's more like what I was saying, like with the other Crow movies, that it's like, let's use this concept. And so they use the concept. I mean, there are bouncers in bars across the country. This is not like a brand new, never thought of this thing before, right? And there are things that they did that I think actually, you know, to update it, to make it work a little bit more. I mean, you know, I don't think I'm really spoiling anything, because if you've seen the trailers like at all, the new character, Dalton, he's not famous because he's a famous bouncer. He's famous because he was a famous UFC fighter.
Right.
That's how people recognize him. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that seems a little bit more believable than he's just a bouncer who's got a reputation so impressive that it's spread across states. I mean, right?
You mean you don't have legendary bouncers that you're afraid a fan of?
Sadly, no. If I knew any, maybe I would. But, you know, maybe I just hang out in the wrong circles.
Yes, that is the conceit of the original. You know, now, are you willing to consider, because I understand, as I understand it, the plot is fairly different, too. Like, not just, but like the original Dalton, the Patrick Swayze Dalton, is James Dalton. Whereas the Jake Gyllenhaal Dalton is actually Elwood Dalton. So is it possible that like it is actually not sequel, a remake,
and, like, but it's just a sequel. Like,
this is his cousin. Yeah.
What was the original? Or cousin or whatever.
Yeah, it's James and Elwood, not Jake and Elwood. I know.
Okay. But when you said Jake Gyllenhaal, I was like, wait, my brain snapped there.
He is Elwood Dalton. So like maybe it's just like his third cousin who's also a bouncer, you know?
Well, but see, that's the thing, is he doesn't start out to be a bouncer. That's not
maybe he takes up, he's a UFC fighter who takes a job as a bouncer, as opposed to just, you know, world famous bouncer.
So, you know, if they want to do another one and reveal somehow later on that he's like related to the original, I would be like, that's hysterical. Go for it. And of course, the fight sequences in this one, in the new one, I think were better. I mean, Doug Liman, the guy who did like Bourne Identity and Edge of Tomorrow and Mr. and Mrs. Smith, he's the one who did it, who directed it. So, and I'm sure there's a new generation of people who are like, oh, hey, I'm going to watch this because Conor McGregor, I think is the guy's name. Right? Apparently. Now, I don't watch UFC fighting or whatever, or MMA. So they're like, oh, yeah, he's a big time. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, maybe this whole new generation comes and watches it. And this will be their Roadhouse, you know, which is fine. I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not against remakes. I know all the stuff I was saying about the Crow make it sound like I'm against remaking things. I'm not. As long as the movie is good on its own rather than ruining the original. Right. Well, I mean, I think sometimes that's what people feel like, is that the new one sort of tarnishes it. Now, never to be perfectly frank, if you love the original, you know what? It still exists. Go watch it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
There are more bad comics than there are good comics in the history of comics. because that's just how quality works. Like,
Blasphemer.
but I mean, yeah, and there's a lot of
You're right.
like not that's not, I mean, every, I think most comics aspire to be good, but like many of them just aren't. And I don't think that, you know, there are, you know, there's like, oh, these are not my X-Men, this is not my Spider-Man, it's not my Superman. It's like, okay, then go read your Superman. You know, like there's nothing that stops you. Like I don't have a problem with, like, I never felt like the Andrew Garfield movies hurt the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. They're just different, and I like the Tobey ones better because I thought the Garfield ones were poorly written. And like, so it's like, okay, this is a better thing. And I've never had a problem with that. I've never understood the, well, this ruins my childhood, this ruins my, like, this ruins it. It doesn't. There's lots of things where I don't watch the remake. And then there's other things where, you know, I love the movie Maltese Falcon. Maltese Falcon's a remake. People don't know it's a remake, but it is. The original Maltese Falcon
Yes,
comes out
it
10 years earlier and it doesn't star Bogey and it's not as good. But it's actually, I find it to be very interesting. I've watched both of them. I've actually taught them both. I've taught those
is.
movies. I've assigned those movies in class. And you know, there's multiple versions of A Postman Always Rings Twice. There, you know, I like film noir. So there, and I've assigned both of those. And sometimes you have interesting things. There are, I don't know, a bajillion different versions of Romeo and Juliet. And that's before you start counting, you know, West Side Stories, all of which I like for different, well, not all of which, many of which I like for different reasons. You know, so and the ones that I don't like are, you know, fine. I just don't watch them again. And I never understood, if something really is quality, then I don't think anybody can ruin it for you. I don't see how they would.
Well, I think. I don't know. That's an interesting question because I know people talk about that sometimes about how, like, there are some things that you shouldn't remake. Like, you should leave these alone because this movie was so good that trying to redo it isn't worth it. Like, it couldn't possibly be better. Now, I mean, whether you agree with that or not, I mean, who knows? I mean, sometimes it's just an exercise to me. I mean, like, I saw the remake of Psycho, which was a shot-for-shot
Shot for
remake.
shot redo. Yes, it was the,
And
it is an
it did
exercise in
feel
pointlessness. It was.
exactly that felt like, okay, so you loved the original and you wanted to do this.
Today we would do this with deepfake. Today we would just replace, like, yes, it is literally Vince Vaughn wants to be in the Anthony Perkins role, so they just did it. That's the one you're talking about, right? Like, it's just, I think it was Vince Vaughn that remade it. Yeah, it was Vince Vaughn, isn't it? And it's just, and
A
it's,
Van
and
Zandt,
today,
Well,
yeah, and
and
today we would just do that with deepfake. We could just redo this.
you know, I'm and I thought earlier this, you know, the different media changes our interaction with that because, you know, stage plays are rebooted every time they do one. Yeah, like how many versions of Cabaret have there been in the last 50 years?
One
And
every
I was
night.
in one of them.
Yeah, right. And so, and that's just expected. Like, okay, did the movie version of Cabaret ruin what came before? Did the one that's currently running ruin the one that Emma Stone was in? Yeah, we just accept that as the nature of the beast.
No, I just like people say that though, and I never get it. So it's sort of a make or
And I'm with
remove.
you, Matt, that idea of it ruining something. Like the original is still there.
Well,
I think people identify so strongly with things they love that
well,
it feels like a personal insult as opposed to this is just a different product.
I
People
don't understand
internalize,
that.
yeah, people internalize their loves to such an extent that any attack on something they love, whether it's an attack or not, but anything
So,
that that shows a different version of this thing they love feels like a personal attack. It's become a joke on the show here. Just, you know, how many times I had that in the store, the not my Batman. And people get like really pissed off and upset if there's a version of Batman in a comic that doesn't match their headcanon of who Batman is. Like, have you looked at the racks and seen how many Batmen there are?
Well, okay, so my example.
All the Draculas. Yeah, who he said one episode.
So here's an example, and it's a continuous sequeling, not a reboot, but I'm sure a reboot's coming sooner rather than later. I'm positive of it. Highlander. I love the film Highlander. I think Highlander is brilliant. There has been, you know, there has Highlander came out And I believe there are three sequels, two, three. No, there are four film sequels plus like three TV series.
I thought there was one more than that, but that's okay.
Highlander, Highlander 2, The Quickening, Highlander 3, The Sorcerer, Highlander Endgame, and Highlander The Source are the films. And then the TV series are Highlander The Series and Highlander The Raven. And there's also an animated series.
Didn't they just recently announce that Cavill's going to be?
Yeah, I saw that this morning.
They're trying. And I don't know if that's official or not, but like, that is a thing that I've heard, and it's going to happen. And out of all that, how many good Highlander movies are there? One, kind of. It's actually not like, if you watch it, it's not even great. I love it. I adore it. But it's a movie that had really, you know, Highlander made $12 million at the box office on an $18 million budget. It was a colossal failure. So like, it's never been, you know, it's never been world
somehow right. It got four sequels, right?
Right. I love it. And like Highlander 2, which came out in 91, is an atrocity. It is one of the worst pieces of garbage I've ever seen. It is absolutely horrible. But like, that doesn't end.
Highlander 2, The Sickening. Is that what you?
Yes, basically. And people talk about it like, oh, well, this retroactively hurts the first film. No, it doesn't, because no Highlander fan counts the second movie. Even the later movies don't count the second movie. Highlander 3 just ignores the existence of the second movie in its entirety, as does 4, mm-hmm. as does 5. Like, they all, like, Highlander 3 picks up saying, yeah, you know, right after the last thing that we did in 1986, we're just going to ignore entirely everything that happened in 91, because it doesn't matter. It was bad and stupid.
Yeah, the last couple of Halloween movies, ignoring 30 years of Halloween movies.
Yep, it's fine. And, you know, and for some people, I mean, Halloween's had several timelines. They've had reboots. They've had like this. Mm-hmm. These most recent movies are direct sequels to the original film, but they ignore even Halloween 2. They ignore Halloween. Like Laurie Strode has come back in, you know, like, and had a direct sequel to the original Halloween like three times now.
Halloween, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It just, does that ruin anything? Or
I don't know that. I mean, I would say that it doesn't necessarily ruin anything, mm-hmm. but at the same time, if you told me that they were going to do a new version of The Princess Bride, mm-hmm. I would pitch a fit. What? Now, I don't know that I would go so far as to say I refuse to watch it, but I would be like, this one was so perfect, why do we need to redo it?
Well,
now, that doesn't mean it won't happen.
Yeah, I think that's a movie that's a prime example of what we were talking about earlier, whether it's perfect or just such a singular entity impossible to recapture that.
And the example there is RoboCop. They did this with RoboCop, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that the original RoboCop is sheer brilliance, given what, you know, for what it is. If you haven't gone back and seen RoboCop recently, what RoboCop is doing is absolutely unbelievable. And they had several sequels, which aren't great, but, you know, they're fine, mm-hmm. whatever. And then they did a rebooted RoboCop, which just tries to tell the original story again. And it lacks soul. So now people just, I don't think anybody's watched the RoboCop reboot since it came out. And now they're working on another sequel to RoboCop, which is going to be a direct sequel, like the way Halloween did, because it turns out that, like, nobody liked it. So, like, I'm okay with people just sort of, hey, you know, you get a shot at this, you take a shot, mm-hmm. and, you know, so if they make another Princess Bride, there's two possibilities, or there's three possibilities. It could just be a colossal failure, and everybody will ignore it, and they will watch the original. It will be as mm-hmm. good or better than the original, and people will be like, I'll be damned, I didn't think they could make another Princess Bride, but they did, and they're both great, like A Star Is Born, you know? Or it will be entirely forgettable, like this RoboCop thing, and no one will care, and it will move on. Like, so I don't see the problem. And I think that's what this Crow is going to be. I think this Crow is either going to be, you know, completely forgettable, probably, because, you know, how many forgettable action movies do we have every year? Or it's going to be really good. And then it's going to, like, I think that's the fear. The real fear I think people have is, what if this Crow movie is really good, and then nobody wants to watch the Crow movie that I love?
Yeah.
Like, that's the fear, right? Because, like, if it's really bad, who cares?
So what if it overshadows this thing that I adore?
What if it overshadows the niche one that I love? Like the way Maltese Falcon does, right? Like Maltese Falcon, no one watches the original one. So what if that happens with The Crow?
And I feel bad for the diehard fans of the original one too, because, you know, they...
The original Maltese Falcon?
Yeah. They're hardcore fans.
That movie's from 1931.
Well, it ruined their life. I would say, right, like the new Ocean's 11, very few people go back and watch the original.
I have, and I'm not a big fan of the original Ocean's movies.
I said very few.
The new one, far better than the original. The original Ocean's 11 is utter garbage. It's a piece of shit. It is only the same movie in name, and it is crap. It is absolute crap.
Well, I mean, and some of this is, okay, so let's pick a different one that's a little more
Fast and Furious.
Like, no, that's kind of fair. I happen to like, I like both of them. I happen to like Pierce Brosnan one better because I like Pierce Brosnan. And I like the art heist more than the original, which was a bank robbery.
Okay. But
the original got very good, as I seem to recall, got good reviews. And people like Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway and, oh, they're so great, right? I don't remember how good the the reviews were. But I mean, I thought it did pretty well. And so it was one of those ones where I think people were like, oh, why are you redoing this one? And like I said, I think both of them are good. They're different enough that I don't feel like they're necessarily imposing on each other, which is how I felt about the female Ghostbusters. To me, it felt like it's different enough that it's not really, it's not the same movie, you know?
I thought it was fine. I think it took unbelievable extra shit because, you know, they were ladies. Like, that was part of it. And it was the beginning of, people doing the specifically, and I'm going to use the catchphrase, the get woke, go broke, like, argument. Like, there's always been people hating on things because there are women in it, or hating on things because there's black people in it, or hating on things because there's gay people in it. There's always been prejudice. The very specific movement of stop being woke, and quote woke TM or SJWs in that time, like that is a specific movement that crests with the 2016 Ghostbusters, the lady Ghostbusters, as we often call it. And I think that, like, because the movie, I don't think the movie's awful. I think it's just kind of, it's fine. But I also feel that way about the original Ghostbusters. I'm not a huge fan. I think the lady Ghostbusters is ever so slightly not quite as good as the first men's Ghostbusters, but probably on par with Ghostbusters 2. I like them equally. So it's fine. You know? Yeah. But I think that's where you had the, you know, it should be allowed to just be a forgettable thing. Why can't you have a forgettable thing? You use the Ocean's 11's thing as an example, and I think that's the fear, right? No one is ever going to go watch Frank Sinatra's Ocean's 11. Like, no one cares. Because George Clooney's version is the definitive one now.
Frank who?
Exactly.
But sometimes, for younger, like, okay, if we're going to say remakes that, you know, didn't work, Point Break.
Yeah.
Who cares about the Point Break remake? It was not good. Or, well, Rollerball, that one was only even, like, vaguely related. It wasn't really a remake.
No one cared either time. But Rollerball's a joke both times.
Excuse me?
I like bad movies too, but no one's going to like be like Rollerball is not going to be winning awards of any kind.
Here's my fear is that in 10 years, somebody's going to reboot the Vox Popcast and make the last 300 plus episodes just, you know, just going to ruin them.
There is a competing show that wants to be there's someone, every once in a while somebody will tell me they tried to listen to the show, but it was in Spanish. And why? It's not Spanish. It's in Tagalog. It's a Filipino show. But there is a show that calls itself Vox Popcast PH that is clearly trying to do our show. And they're not as good. Yeah, I know.
Wow. What a sincere form of flattery.
Yeah. Maybe they don't know about us, but, like, I don't see how they could not, because, you know, like, when we started this show, I did, you know, do a search to see if anybody else was using that name. I mean, that was sort of the point, right? So, I don't know. But yeah, they call themselves Vox, all capital letters, space, pop, POP, all capital, cast, and they're by Vox Populi PH, and their logo is like a microphone with a bunch of random, like there's an eyeball
Wow.
and stuff. It's they haven't had a show, they haven't had an episode since 2021. They tried to do seasons. They've only got, but like they're clearly, like definitely, they had to have known about us. They ran from 2020 in December through December 2021.
Wow.
You have imitators.
Yeah. So
Nice.
who did they cast as us?
I don't know. But it's just like, I mean, like, what do you even do, right? Like,
And now I'm just imagining people there like playing the parts of Mab and Hannah and yeah.
yeah. I mean, well, like, it's a format. I mean, even our show is just like, it's us talking about a thing, you know? And our show is the same as many other podcasts, you know?
Yeah.
I like to think we're pretty good at this, but like, also, it's just, this is just what it is. Lots of shows are just people talking about pop culture. We have a catchy name. And so I was kind of irritated with them. I said, why is somebody taking our catchy name? For what is very clearly an inferior version of our show.
You're right. It's the inferior
I
reboot. Oh,
mean, I can't actually speak the language, so I don't know.
yeah. So we've resolved nothing. Hey.
No.
I
Yeah,
think we've
yeah.
resolved that if you like a movie, just like the movie. And if you hate the remake, just ignore the remake and go
Yeah.
on with your life.
Yeah, I think bottom line for a lot of our shows are like, if you like it, good.
I mean,
Whatever it happens to be.
it's kind of funny because it's my job, our jobs, like we are literally like the thing that you become when you go out and study literature is you get to, it's called criticism, right? Like we are critics in the purest sense, in the academic sense, that's what it is. I usually use the term theorist. Like I like to say that I'm a cultural theorist as opposed to a cultural critic, but like it's really both. But I think that criticism in the popular sense takes on a different, like people think that criticism is, all right, so here's a thing and I'm going to complain about it and tell you all the ways in which it sucks. And you know, I guess that is a thing that you can do. It's
The
just
title
not
out of 9 out of 10 YouTube videos.
right. And it's just not what I enjoy doing. Now, I mean, it's a thing
Yeah.
that has a real market. You know, there's, like you said, 9 out of 10 YouTube videos. So, like, it's just not how, like, I'd rather analyze and deconstruct. And, you know, Nicole, you said, you know, we like bad movies in some sense. Now, part of it is just me enjoying things I can laugh at. But also, I think there's a lot of value in watching something that is not great, that has problems. And, you know, you can learn things, you know, about the culture that created that thing by looking at it. It's one of the reasons I like doing compare and contrast things in class. I will frequently assign two versions of the same movie to my students to watch and tell them, you know, okay, tell me, why do you like one better than the other?
And I think it reminds me of a popular YouTube channel called Cinema Sins, right? And I used to watch some of those. And, you know, sometimes I agreed with him, sometimes I didn't. And then I discovered a channel called Cinema Wins,
Wins, yeah.
right? Which
Everything
is the
great
same
about.
sort of format. But the whole sort of point between that is because liking something is more fun. And that's his whole thing, is let's talk about all the stuff that's great about whatever, you know, about this movie.
And they're the
And
same
I
show,
mean,
other
he,
than that. They are delightful to watch back to back. I'm actually subscribed
yes,
to
they
both of those
are.
channels, and I've sometimes watched their alternate critiques of the same movie. It is interesting when they pick the same film.
Yes.
So, hey, yeah, like Wayne
Is. I
said,
mean,
like what you like.
Doesn't mean, and it doesn't mean you can't criticize it. I mean, when I
Right,
say I
yeah.
like bad movies, I mean, I can acknowledge here are the shortcomings, and yet I can
Yeah.
still enjoy it, you know? I mean, you know, Deep Blue Sea is not like a masterpiece of movie making, but it's fun.
Deep Blue Sea, starring Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes, for a little
Kinda.
while.
There's a remake, that remake reboot. What about the Shaft series? I'm a fan of the Shaft series. We recently lost Richard Roundtree, but like Shaft, I've seen all of Shaft. I've watched all the original Roundtree movies. I have not yet watched the most recent movie that stars Samuel Jackson, the Samuel L. Jackson version of Shaft, his son. I need to watch it. It's a comedy, but like Richard Roundtree and Sam Jackson are both in it, and it retcons apparently. So in Shaft 2000, the 2000 version that stars Sam Jackson, Richard Roundtree is in that as Shaft's uncle, who he's named after. But in this most recent reboot, Richard Roundtree's character is Shaft's father. So, you know, he's John Shaft Jr. and John Shaft III is who they are. And I find that fascinating because if you look them up on Wikipedia or IMDb, Richard Roundtree's only like 7 years older than Sam Jackson. Yes. So like they're not actually that different in age. But I also know the character of Shaft. So I'm like 7 years old, I buy it. So I need to watch those films.
Yeah, I watched the first one of those and enjoyed it. Yeah.
Original Shaft, the return.
No, the reboot.
Sam
Jackson.
I completely forgotten about it until you talking about it. Oh, hey, I saw that.
Yeah. So now I'm going to have to go watch the, I believe, 2020 Shaft? 21? I'll have to check that. Yeah, but anyway.
I think that's something I consumed during the COVID time, so which all blends together, which is why I didn't remember it.
Anyway, Nicole, where can people find you?
I'm still on Twitter, and I refuse to call it X, so they can find me there if they want. Or if you have questions about the pop culture, the National Popular Culture Association, you know, feel free to contact me, and I'll convince you to come to the conference next year, New Orleans, baby.
New Orleans, Louisiana, which I believe we've been talking. We're going to try to get as many people from the show there so you can meet and hang out with us. Cool. That's the plan, at least. We'll see how it works out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that works out. But yeah, we're trying to make some group plans for that.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, what about you?
Oh, here, you know, maybe New Orleans next year.
People can plan ahead to like see you in New Orleans. Like, yes. Go to New Orleans and meet Wayne Wise. Why would you wait to go there and not go to Pittsburgh? I don't know.
Well, because
New Orleans is more fun than Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they have better food and music, and yeah.
Anyway, as always, is Pittsburgh.
I do a lot of food and music here. So.
Well, as always, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or Blue Sky, Mastodon. When I remember, I forget Mastodon. Honestly, you probably can't find me on Mastodon. I'm probably on Threads. I usually remember that one before I remember Mastodon. But anyway, all the places, always at Chris Maverick. You can follow the show. Some of those places we're on currently on Twitter. We also don't call it X, Facebook and Blue Sky at Vox Popcast. You can follow the show's blog at www.voxpopcast.com, where we post about whatever we're going to be talking about next week. And you can leave us comments on this or any other show. You can suggest topics or say anything that passes your mind. Sometimes we pick guests from the blogs. Sometimes we pick show ideas from the blogs. You know, it's also just good to have feedback. So if you enjoy the show, and we certainly hope you do, then please subscribe to us on iTunes or Spotify or Pandora or wherever the hell you get podcasts from. And do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you leave us a 5-star review, especially on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, that gooses the algorithm, makes us more popular, and really helps us out. I would like to thank Maximilian of Thoughtform Music for our epic theme song, building ever so more epically and playing us out. I'd once again like to thank Nicole for joining us. I'd like to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.